Blog Talk Radio.
Is lit, he may have to litigate. Don't worry, be happy.
Look at me, I'm happy.
This conference is being recorded.
Don't worry, be happy.
And top of the morning to you, they say, don't worry, be happy. Good morning. Top of the morning to you. Folks, we welcome you to the Billionaire Mastermind Forum. And we come to you each and every morning with that sole purpose of creating a mastermind alliance. It says when two or more minds come together, it has the ability to stimulate and activate the divine source that's within you. So this morning, as always, we open up our platform and say, it's a new day, and this is yours truly, Dr. Goldrich Mind, and that philosopher, the prosperity philosopher, coming to you out of this great state of New York. So nice they named it twice. Mic check. Let me see. Who we have here this one? I think we might have Billionaire Baby. Let me see. Mike, check. Are you still with us, Billionaire Baby?
Good morning.
Good morning. And I see Billionaire Happy is with us this morning as well.
Yes.
So that is great, great, great. And also I see we have with us the one and only Dr. Russ Johnson, who's going to be, I guess, speaker this morning.
Kind of yes, sir. How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes. And, well, folks, we really appreciate you tuning in to with us each and every morning here on the Billionaire Mastermind Forum. And what we say, when two or more minds come together, got the ability to stimulate and activate the divine source that's within you. And that statement is made every single day, and it's a fact without question. But we always say, well, if that's the case, and activate the divine source that's within us, let me just put this.
All callers are muted.
If that's the case, externally, we're having some challenges, even though we're connected to the divine source, our creator. So we say we can download all the good that you desire, but what you need is that mental self-discipline, folks. That's what you need to make you turn your dreams into reality. And that's what we come forth here each and every morning to help you stimulate that ability to have that mental self-discipline. So this morning we have our guest on this morning. It's kind of like he's more than a guest. He's one of our hosts, really, co-hosts, really, because he's been with us so many times, Dr. Johnson. And good morning again. How are you this morning?
Fine, sir.
Great. And I'm going to bring our co-host, Billionaire Baby, Dr. Sween. We're going to have Dr. Russ Johnson. And we're going to be a continuation of manifesting abundance in your life. This morning, we're going to talk about what we spoke on yesterday. The black brain drain is what the topic, one of the topics here this morning. The black community brain drain, as some of the controversies it's dealing with here at the city of Baltimore with the president, and the miseducation of the Negro, which I referred to yesterday. So we want to kind of address some of those issues this morning in a continuation on manifest and abundance. So good morning, Dr. Sween. Good morning to you. And I'm glad to have you with you this morning and bring us happy. I think that's just the only co-host we have with us this morning. And we appreciate you both be with us this morning. Dr. Johnson, Dr. Russ Johnson, gosh, this gentleman here is a personal friend, a master educator, a historian in all areas, especially in black history and facts and figures. And, you know, he's a graduate of Harvard. He's a professor, has his PhD. He's a radio host. And his one of his claims to fame is that he jumped out of the rat race 30 or 40 years ago and jumped into entrepreneurship and network marketing in particular, and went out and through that industry and being coach, he's created millions of dollars in income. But more important than the income that Dr. Johnson has created and the leadership that he has provided in network marketing, he's a historian in terms of black history. He also was born in the city of Baltimore, so I brought him on today because of the controversy that is going on in Baltimore, where number 45 has called that city roach infested, I believe, and no human being could live in it. I might be misquoting what he said, how he said it, but it wasn't good. It wasn't a good representation of it. So I asked Dr. Johnson to come on to kind of give us kind of an overview of outlining and painting a picture of the problem that we have here in the black community. And then we're going to dive into what some of the solutions can be. So what's on my mind this morning is the black community brain drain, where we educate ourselves, leave the community and move to other communities and leave our community behind. We don't come back into our community to show a lifestyle or image to the younger generation that they can go beyond drugs and violence and robberies and be successful. It's referred to as the black brain drain, really. And that happens in many, many communities as well. But Dr. Johnson, just a little opening up there. What's your opinion on what's going on and the statements that are being made about your hometown there, Baltimore, Maryland?
The good old Baltimore, huh?
Yeah. The good old Baltimore. They're putting it on the map for you, buddy.
Absolutely. Well, Baltimore's in problem. They do have their problems. Baltimore, it used to, when I was born there or when I lived there, I think they had somewhere around 900,000 people. Now it's down to somewhere around 600,000, maybe 500,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
People are leaving, going to Columbia, Maryland, going to Silver Spring, going into D.C., going into Prince George's County, other surrounding areas, rather than to stay in Baltimore. Now, there is some re-gentrification going on with Harvard mm-hmm. Place and Fells Point, and even coming up on Bolton and Utah Place, the people coming in and buying up the dilapidated homes, fixing them up, and now they worth them. Used to be worth $10,000-$20,000, now they're worth $200,000-$400,000 in those areas now. So it's being redeveloped as it is around Howard University. When I was there years ago, you get a house for $20,000-$30,000. Now that $20,000 house is $1 million house now down on mm-hmm. U Street and Georgia Avenue. So that's being redeveloped. As a matter of fact, if we were to go back into the 1800s, we understand that Georgetown, which is really exclusive area, was mm-hmm. all a black area, but now it's all white, and you know, and all the millionaires have all the homes there. So what has happened in many respects, that when we move into those areas like Park Heights and go out to those areas where Liberty Heights, we go into those areas and you look around after you move in 10 years later, in a dilapidated, rundown, properties not being cared for. So somehow it's not uncommon if you go to Compton, California or Harlem back in the 30s or the 40s. I mean, the same situation exists, that when people of color move in, they somehow forget to take care of the property. So you know that's true, and we see it all around us. Mm-hmm. We can turn that around, I suspect, if we really work at it. So what he says is true.
Yeah, what do you say? You're talking about number 45. But we have communities where there was 100% black and got beautiful properties and manicured lawns as well.
Sure.
You said that they forget to take care of the property. Is it forgetting to take care of the property, or is it an educational mindset lack of finances?
Well, the people who move in don't seemingly have it as a top priority to take care of the community. A lot of people come from other parts of the South or wherever they come from. But it's real. It's real. I mean, you can't deny it. When you walk down the streets of Baltimore, Park Heights, North Avenue, and look at Pennsylvania, North and Pennsylvania. I mean, I used to live down there years and years ago, but now it's all drug infested and people selling drugs, and the property is dilapidated and going to pot, so to speak. We just have to go ahead.
Yeah, I understand that we have that in many of our communities all throughout the country.
Sure.
And the our race as a whole, we are suffering from lack and limitation. As you say, is a COVID cycle limited thinking that's going on. But there are some of us that are surviving and living a quality, middle-class quality lifestyle. But there's a large percentage that's not, and they seem to be, you know, in the cities. But overall, be it those of us that's living what we think a middle-income lifestyle and we're comfortable, but there's still limitations on our end as how far we can go and what we can do to live the real American dream, which is the financial freedom. But getting back to this issue of the quote-unquote, as they refer to our community, as the ghetto or the black community, and the challenge that we have there, I refer to the black community brain drain, where we ourselves, like yourself and myself, we left and went to better areas. And then when we leave and go to better areas, then there's no image or role models, I should say, that the young generation or their community can see people that is living a better lifestyle and, you know, driving a nice car and dressing nice and living in a nice home. But what would you say is, I guess, some of the problems, what's causing that? Now, I've referred to the miseducation of a Negro. Mr. Wilson talks about that our educational system has taught us to go out and so give your opinion on the miseducation side of what we're talking about here with Mr.
Wilson. Well, there's a tremendous miseducation of all people, of Negro and others. The educational systems at, say, Fisk University, Howard University, Morehouse, Clark, Spelman, I mean, let's just go to American University, Columbia University, and even Princeton, Yale, and Harvard. Those educational systems that are being have been there for many, many hundreds of years are old and outmoded in many respects. You know, grow up, get a good education, get a good job, and stay on that job for 40, 50, 60 years and get a gold watch and retire with all your benefits. That's no longer applicable. That's no longer a reality. I mean, if you look at Robert Kiyosaki, that's Rich Dad Poor Dad, and The Business School, another good book, or you listen to Les Brown or Mark Victor Hansen or Bob Proctor, you'll see that that's an outdated, antiquated, anachronistic system of training and development. It does not work anymore because it doesn't teach you to be creative. It doesn't teach you how to manage, even balance your checkbook. It doesn't teach you how to be an entrepreneur. It teaches you how to get a good job if there's one, and many of them are not available anymore. If there's one available, and work for the man for the rest of your life. That's no longer operable in the world of finance, in the world of reality.
Now, you have very large millions and millions of educated blacks that are living the middle-class lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
They had a mortgage, a great home, even in that surrounding areas that you're talking about. And
well, they live in payday to payday. Yes, true. Yes.
Yeah, they got a good. They make six figures. Some of them make $50,000 on the average, especially in that area.
They still live on payday to payday. Many of them.
Payday to payday. So, as we talk about the brain drain here, that's what I'm kind of referring to about
mm-hmm.
black community. We get educated, we leave, and we go out to the suburbs, and we live in a better community. Is this one of the challenges that we are facing in the community where people do not have this education? But even the education that you're talking about is limited. It's been strong enough to get some people out of the ghetto, right, and then live in a good quality middle-class lifestyle. But are you saying that's not enough for those people living from paycheck to paycheck? What are your points?
I'm saying the people who are teachers and preachers and cabinet makers and engineers, most of them are living paycheck to paycheck because they don't even know how to balance it. You know, they don't have, at the end of the month, they're struggling. I mean, the statistics is on my side when you look at the people who are so-called, quote-unquote, middle class, which is disappearing, not only in terms of black communities, but the white community and any other community.
Mm-hmm.
Things are changing drastically now. And so people have to wake up and say, well, wait a minute, that old paradigm that we live, you know, grow up, be a good person, get a good education, get this wonderful degree, and get this wonderful job at IBM or Ford Motor Company or wherever it was in existence, it's no longer operable. It's no longer valid. Robert Kiyosaki, Les Brown, Mark Victor Hansen, Paul Zane Pilsen, all Malcolm Gladwell, all those books will tell you that that's no longer reality. As a matter of fact, let's talk about that for a minute. These people, there are 4,200 universities in this country. The average enrollment, 15,000 people. So, you know, there are millions and millions of students going to those wonderful universities to get a degree. When you look at the reality of it, 54% of those people who graduate from Columbia University or American University or Catholic University or even Howard University, 54% of them are now unemployed or underemployed. They're working for – they're waiting tables and stuff. 76% of the people who graduate with a degree in whatever discipline ends up going to another field. So it doesn't work anymore. It's antiquated, anachronistic, and needs to be revived. But nobody – but the people who are professors and chairman of departments and presidents of the university are not going to voluntarily revive anything. They're not going to make any changes. So it's going to remain that way until some other people come down and usurp their decision-making and created a better system. That's just the way it is.
Okay, let's take you for an example. You were born in Baltimore.
Yep.
And you worked your way out. You went into Howard. You got your PhD, incredible education, and even a professor in a school. You did all of that stuff. These are the people
I did,
about.
I taught at Howard University. I taught at Morgan. I taught at Antioch. And it took me 1,000 years to get my degrees because I bounced around and I wasn't focused. And so finally, a friend of mine who was a community organizer way back when, after I had gone to 5 different colleges and I had all these credits, and he
mm-hmm.
says, Russell, do you have your degree yet? I said, no, I'm not going to bother. He said, no. We're not going to settle for that. I want you to go to this the chairman of the department of this university and tell him that you want to enroll and I want you to finish up. And I did. I listened to what he said. And I finished my BA, MA, PhD, and I started teaching at Howard University. At the same time he told me that, I was working on many radio stations in Baltimore and in Washington, D.C., WEBB, WSID, whatever. As a matter of fact, Oprah and I worked in television together. She was at WJZ TV 13, and I was at WBAL TV 11 as a newscaster. She was a newscaster. They didn't like her on news, and I'll get back to this. But anyway, and put her on talk radio. She went against Donahue in Chicago. She's now worth about $3 billion. When a guy found her, he took over a contract and showed her how to make some serious money. But I'm saying to you that there are people who come out of that, like Bob Johnson of BET, Black Entertainment Television. He started in 1976 when I was at Howard. I didn't think he could make it. Obviously, he made it and sold it for $3 billion. Now he's a billionaire. So there are people, even Kathy Hughes, who happens to have Radio 1, she was a secretary at Howard University when I got there with Tony Brown as chairman of the department. Now she has Radio 1. I think she has somewhere around 60, 70 radio stations. She's worth around $200-400 million, doing an excellent job with Radio 1 across the whole of the United States. Yes, there are people who are there who have come out of there and are doing great things.
So what I'm getting from you, using you as an example,
mm-hmm.
the education that you receive put you on a path to take you, even yourself, which you haven't spoke about yet, but you went on to make millions and millions of dollars.
True, yeah.
Outside of the education, the 9-to-5 corporate structure.
Yeah.
But you speak about the corporate structure that people who graduate from schools, you know, they have limited resources today. So what got you on the path that makes your path a little bit different than the average graduate today in terms of degrees and stuff? Seems like you went on to make millions of dollars and other people still struggling to pay their mortgage.
Okay. When I was teaching at Howard University, I was also working as a consultant for National Public Radio. I was doing volunteer work with Pacifica Radio, WPFW. I was with Howard University's radio station, WHUR, doing some weekend work. But I also joined Amway Corporation back in 1978. That's 41 years ago. And that was my first. And I joined because a friend of mine, she was pursuing it, and I said, let me join, see what she's doing, and followed her. And then the bug bit me that this is a great way to be an independent, to be an entrepreneur, to be in charge of your finances, time freedom, and to achieve financial security and independence. Many people have done it in the last 75 years, being in network marketing. I like to call it social commerce. They're like the Chinese do these days. But anyway, it's an industry that's about $200 billion industry. I joined, yes. I stayed many years, stumbled, fumbled, fell on my face, finally figured it out, and finally got to the point I could make $10,000 a month staying at home. And for the last 25 years, I've been able to sit in my house and on average, do $250,000 a year in income. Now, you know, some years better than others, but at least a six-figure income, let's call it that way. So, yes, I finally figured out. I've written two books on how to do it. And one of the books, if you don't want to go to Amazon to buy it, you can go to Vote, V-O-T-E, 4, the number 4, Vets, like a veteran, V-E-T-S.com, and you'll see my picture, you'll see my bio, and you go down to the bottom, you put an email in it, and the book will come up. You can read it online, or you can download it, and that's the 21-day challenge, the last one I wrote. I think it's fairly good. But anyway, there are many books. You have written one. I am saying that to become an entrepreneur, like Robert Kiyosaki tells us in his book, The Business School, or Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he slept in his car for a couple, okay, he was homeless for a while, but now he's a multi-millionaire. But he tells us that to have a job is not the way to go. To be an entrepreneur is the way to go for the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
Let me ask you this question. You said have a job is not. I'm being a devil's advocate on both sides.
Sure.
But when you say you had a job and at the same time you were working on the side,
absolutely.
Until you figure out on how that platform of entrepreneurship and network marketing could pay you, and it took you years to do that. So, wouldn't you say that there would be a dual benefit here if a person has a job, but at the same time they have
on the side
work on the side? Yeah, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
How would you say?
Look, in Baltimore, I've had 52 jobs. Okay, so
how many jobs?
52.
52. Okay.
I taught fifth grade, sixth grade. I worked the steel mill, the assembly line. I was a porter. I drove a cab. I drove a bus. I don't want to go down the list. I've had 52 of those things called jobs, so I know how to do a job. Right? It's all clothes, clothing stores, the whole nine yards. But I am saying nothing wrong with a job until you figure out that you need to be, in 2019, you need to be an entrepreneur on the side. Keep your job. And Jim Rohn, if people don't know him, just punch up Jim, R-O-H-N, and he's a master of teaching us how to do this thing. He says, keep your job because that helps you to make a living and pay your bills, but work on the side at your business to become rich and wealthy. Right? That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. He became a millionaire. He kept his job for you know, between 25 and 30. But between 25 and 30, he worked in networking, and he became a millionaire. So by the time he's 31, he still had his job, but he was a millionaire on the side. Do like Grant Cardone. He has the 10X formula. He has a book called Sell or Be Sold. Now, for the last 25 years, he's been out there in sales, teaching us how to be salespersons, if you will. And he's now worth somewhere around $1 billion, at least $300-400 million. And he teaches us how to get, and he's got his wonderful degree from a university. But he says the best deal is to be entrepreneur, being self-employed, and go out there and make the money, especially in sales.
Well, one sec. Let me do a commercial here. Folks, you listen to Russ Johnson. This is the Billionaire Mastermind Forum. And we're here talking this morning about really the topic that I had is the miseducation of the Negro and the black community brain drain as we are going through entrepreneurship and the doing a comparison between working a 9-to-5. And we're kind of saying we want to deal with now we haven't identified what is called a lot of the problems, but there are problems in our community where there's lack of finances and lack of jobs and resources. But what we want to kind of deal with, what can be done, what we have available in our communities, Mr. Johnson, to solve some of the lack and limitations that people have in terms of education, maybe financing a course and having more money and a better lifestyle. We talk about the problem that number 45 speaks about in your town, wherever you were born, Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And what it seems like you are saying, part of the solution is self-education in the area of sales and network marketing, entrepreneurship. Is that what
you're saying? That's a start, yes. People... Everybody sells, right? When we find a good restaurant, when we find a good theater, when we find a good meal, when we find a good church or synagogue or mosque with Jehovah's Witness, whatever, you always tell people about the sale that you've run into or the deal that you've gotten that is called dealership or some fabulous clothing that you found or the weave instead of $5,000 is now $1,000 at some place. So we all sell because we refer and recommend what we have found beneficial to us, whether it be a church or synagogue or a school, to other people, except that you don't get paid for recommending and promoting, except in network marketing or networking, if you will, or social media, whatever you want to call it, social commerce, whatever you want to call it, they will pay you to recommend and promote whatever goods or services that you're talking about that you believe in. That's the difference. That's the difference. And Eric Worre has a documentary that he put up. His guy's made at least $15 million as a networker. Now he's making more millions if he's got his own plane, the whole nine yards. But anyway, and at one point in his life, some 30 years ago, the best he could make was $200, $300 a month until he finally learned how to do it, and now he's a multi-millionaire. But he put a documentary together that I suggest everybody punch it up. It's called Rise Movie, R-I-S, like sunrise, risemovie.com. It's a documentary that you can find on YouTube. And it's 50 minutes, and it has Paul Zane Pills, Les Brown, Mark Victor Hansen, Bob Proctor. You have all these millionaires who were once poor, broke, if you will, better term, now who are multi-millionaires because they used business and the business savvy and manage themselves and promoted themselves through networking. So you need to look at that. Very important to look at that. And then
would you say that the people that you're referring to, and there's quite a few of them out there, has been very successful,
in the network marketing industry, they're pretty much like people who have a talent. They can sing, they can dance, and they can act. And they've been blessed with this talent, and people obviously discovered these talents, and they became very successful. But the average person kind of look at, I don't have those talents, singing, dancing, and acting, but it appears that some of the people that you mentioned, including yourself, you have discovered a talent within yourself to go out to sell, to recruit, and to build on the entrepreneur's team. So what do you say to a person who understands what you're saying about what they can accomplish but don't feel that they have the talent in order to achieve
the success
that you're talking about?
Excellent question. We all are the same. We all are energy. We came from somewhere in the universe, and we're here for a minute or two, and then we got to leave, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of us are the same. But yet, now that we are here, most of us don't believe. They don't have good self-esteem. They don't have good self-image. They doubt themselves. They question their ability to do anything. The people on this planet are wonderful, creative human beings, and they're full of power, potential, and possibilities. Now, some of it which has been taken from us by many ways, and I can't, it'd take me two more hours to go through that, but you need to redevelop and find out who you are. And one of the reasons you need to do that, and one of the ways you need to do that, is a book called The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale.
Mm-hmm.
You need to listen to that over and over and over again. Then there's another book called As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. Because even in the Bible, it says you bring about what you think about.
Mm-hmm.
It says whatever idea you can conceive and believe, you can achieve. So your thinking makes it so because you are co-creators with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
You are just as powerful as Jeff Bezos, Andrew Carnegie, as Rockefeller, whomever you see walking around. You are just as important, as brilliant, and as creative as they are. It's just that you need to uncover your power. Reverend Ike talked about it. Father Divine, Daddy Grace, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they all told you the same thing, that you are absolutely a creator. If you watch the movie, to go back, Malcolm X, he's hustling in the street and selling drugs, and he's in prison. He came out of that and he became a superhero, right? So you can turn your life around if you understand who you are. Now, most people don't know who they are. Let me take a minute let's go back in 1908, way back when, 1908, a lady said, Madam J.C. Walker. She took $1.50. She came out of the fields with, picking cotton. She was born in slavery. Came out of the fields. She was born in 1867. Came out of the fields and took $1.50 and became a multi-millionaire in 1910 and 1920 and way back when. And they say that she was the first self-made millionaireess. White, black, green, or purple in the United States, but it's wrong. She was the second because the first one was Annie Malone, A-N-N-I-E-M-A-L-O-N-E, who was her teacher. Annie Malone made four times more than Madam J.C. Walker. So I want you to punch that up. And Madam J.C. Walker was one of her students. But at any rate, both of these ladies back at the turn of the century when Andrew Carnegie and J.P. Morgan and Rockefeller were making money, they were also making hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars that they gave to the YMCA, the YWCA. They gave to Howard University. They were philanthropists. They cared about people. They gave money to our community in terms of philanthropy. That's another area that's missing. We need, as a people, to go back and become philanthropists, like Oprah, like Bob Johnson, like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. As a matter of fact, Warren Buffett said the other day, he said, I don't have time to give away this money. I got $70, $80 billion, and it's too, it's overwhelming for me to run my business and give away money at the same time, right? So he told Bill Gates, listen, from now on until the day I leave this planet, I am going to give you $1.5 billion every year. You give it away for me. And that's what Bill Gates is doing for him.
Bill Gates. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we can do the same, Bill Gates. Yes. Yeah. We can do the same.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. Finish.
No, we can start our own 501c3 nonprofit organization,
mm-hmm.
like the Rockefeller Foundation, Andrew Carnegie Foundation, the United Way, the Catholic Charities, the Jewish Charities. We can start our own foundation for only a couple hundred bucks. Well, a few bucks, let's say a few bucks. You can start your own foundation in the community, nonprofit organization, raise money through grants from the big corporations, from the government, from school systems, from other nonprofits, put it in your foundation and give it away to the community and help improve and develop the community. And one lady who's teaching that whole process is called Sherry Watson, and she calls hers the power of purpose. So if you go to powerofpurpose.com,
mm-hmm.
her goal is until she leaves this planet is to teach 10,000 people how to start their own nonprofit organization, how to get the money from the big corporations, and how to give it back to their communities for improvement. So that's
What's her name again?
Sherry Watson. Sherry Watson. And she has an organization called The Power of Purpose. And if you go to www.thepowerofpurpose.com, you will see her website, and you can contact her and say you want to be one of those persons who want to have your own nonprofit organization so you can get all those millions, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in grant monies and give it away to the community to help improve and develop that community. We are not doing that. Back in 1985,
yeah.
they called, and I'll just 60 seconds, I'm finished. They called me in, a community activist. Say, Russell, we don't want to go to the United Way or Catholic Charities or Jewish Charities. We want our own organization. So I started with them, in concert with them, the Black United Fund of Greater Baltimore, and within 1 year I raised $50,000 from payroll deduction. But I had to learn that process. So you too can go to the Black United Fund of New York, the Black United Fund of New Jersey. There are about 30 Black United Funds across the country that have been in existence since 1968, raising money from corporations and from people and other foundations and taking that money and giving back to the Black community for its development. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm going to talk on and on. Go ahead.
Yes, yes. You got a lot of knowledge. I'm going to open up and see if any comments or questions, but I want to kind of go back to this programming over the last 400 some odd years, and all what you're saying is excellent information, and most of the time people can receive information, it kind of rolls water rolling off a duck, you know,
true,
the duck is
true.
Out there and it's raining. And it doesn't sink in. But
true.
The miseducation of a Negro, Mr. Woodson, put it this way, and you can go back, and this is what's constantly on my mind when I look at our communities and the issues that we're suffering. He says, when you control a man's thinking, and we're talking about all what you're saying is possible, and there's a few who actually did, this is my on,
mm-hmm.
Let me read the statement first and then open up. When you control a man's thinking, you do not have to worry about his action.
Mm-hmm.
He would find his proper place and would stay in it. You do not need to send him to the back door. He would go without being told. In fact, if there is no back door, he would protest until one is made for his use.
Mm-hmm.
His education demands it.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote the book, The Miseducation of the Negro. And 400 years of programming
it brought us to where we are today in terms of this miseducation. What you're sharing with us, a few of us, has broke some of those shackles of slavery chain mentality that's been put on us and our forefathers, and we came out, like the Oprahs and the Bob Johnson and yourself and many others who's out there successful. But 99% of our it's the programming. It's a programming problem. So all what you're saying is good. A lot of people are listening. Will be listening or listening right now, but they probably might not take any action and go back to doing what they feel comfortable doing. So this morning, as we brought you on, and you are a great success story. You were able to break out. Come out and build.
Well, I'm
a very
still a student. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. So I have
a successful life, and you have helped me tremendously in my illness when you brought a product to me, and you went on and myself and did extremely well, with that product and that company. But I wanted to bring you on this morning, and being a product of Baltimore, and that you was actually able to rise out of that.
Look who came out of Baltimore, a guy named Reginald Lewis. He became a billionaire with beaches.
Reginald Lewis, yeah.
Yeah, and wrote a book called Why Should White Men Have All the Fun? You need to get that book. Get it. And it shows how he did it from Baltimore. Thurgood Marshall, Supreme Court Justice, Baltimore.
Baltimore, okay.
Earl Graves went to Morgan State University. Now he has Black Enterprise. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Frederick Douglass, come on. All these people coming out of Maryland who have really laid the groundwork for us to excel and produce and be a light to the world of what to do and with your energy and your effort and your time. But for those people who are satisfied with their lives, Jesus had the same problem. He had to get 12 people to help him conduct his ministry. But he says, he sent his disciples into those towns or the cities to try to give them a new message. Matter of fact, all of them agreed that he should be gotten rid of and let's put him on the cross. All the people in the town voted that he's annoyance to us, he needs to get out of here, and let's just put him on the cross and get rid of him. They delivered him. The Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes, they said, get rid of this guy. So he had his problem trying to deliver a new message, a different way of thinking. But there's a phrase that says, I view with profound respect the infinite capacity of the human mind to resist the inroads of useful knowledge. That means never try to teach a pig to sing, because number one, you waste your time, but more importantly, you will annoy the pig. There's some people who won't listen to what you have to say. I don't care if it's 1,000 years from now with the same message, and that's okay. They have a choice.
But all callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
I'm saying to you that people before us have done great jobs. So let's look at something, and I'll be real brief. And you talked about Carter G. Woodson in his book, and people should get that book. But there's another book called The 100 Amazing Facts About the Negro by J.A. Rogers. They need to get that book. They need to get a book called The African-American Inventions That Changed the World by Michael A. Carson. That's another book. And finally, there's another book called American History in Black and White by David Barton. So there are a lot of books. If you go to Amazon and look for Black History or punch it up, you will find this, that people who call themselves Black, if you like that term these days, they created the ironing board, the electric resistor, the cell phone, .com, .net was created by a Black person, the electric lamp bulb, the elevator, air conditioning unit, the gear shift on a car, blood plasma, the bicycle frame, doorknob, the egg beater, shoe lasting, sugar refinery, comb, the thermostat, traffic lights, traffic signs, the typewriter, the sugar refinery, it goes on in terms of the music, gospel, jazz, Motown, hairbrush, shoe horse, horseshoes, ice cream scooper, on and on and on and on. I would take the rest of the hour telling you all the inventions that Black created.